On May 4th, 1970, the climate at Kent State University exploded as the Ohio National Guard fired on unarmed fleeing protesters, an action that left 4 students dead and 9 wounded, one of them paralyzed for life. 3 days of rioting and protest preceded the tragedy, creating a sequence of events fully examined by author Howard Means in the new book 67 Shots, Kent State and the End of American Innocence. Based on oral histories and original interviews, 67 Shots looks back on the tumultuous era, shedding light on the landmark event that no one in America could have predicted, but that in retrospect seems inevitable. Howard Means is an author or co-author of 10 books. He's a former senior editor at Washingtonian magazine, and the new book is 67 Shots, Kent State and the End of American Innocence. The book is published by DeCapo, and we welcome Howard Means to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
What brought you to the subject of wanting to look at it in such detail?
You know, I was a high school teacher when this happened. I thought about it the other day. I was 25. I was teaching juniors and seniors a year or two younger than these kids, and it just had a profound effect on me. I think for that very reason, I could look at these kids I was teaching, and I could think, my God, they could have been them. And then, you know, I just wanted to examine. I've always wanted to look at it, and I thought, well, this is a point in life where I'm trying to understand, whether the way I felt about things back then was accurate or if it was nuanced at all. And I think what I discovered that it wasn't very nuanced at all. That it was fascinating for me in many ways to sort of take this event apart and put it back together again in a way that was meaningful for me and I hope for readers.
Let us look at, when it comes to a timeline, where do you begin the story?
I begin the story the night before, I'm sorry, the night of Thursday, April 30th, with Richard Nixon's address to the nation. Nixon had, weeks earlier, had announced that pulling 150,000 troops out of Vietnam. On that night, April 30th, he rescinded that decision and announced the war was being expanded across the border into Cambodia. In fact, there are a lot of U.S. troops operating behind the border and over the border in Cambodia already. But that set off a wave of protests nationwide and at Kent State among them.
When you look at the situation that was on Kent State and happening in the days and hours before this tragedy, this was being replicated all across the country, correct?
It was. There were a peculiar set of forces came. So the question, of course, is why did it happen at Kent State and not at any place else? And there were a peculiar set of circumstances. One, the mayor, who was an estimable man in every regard, as far as I can tell, simply panicked on Friday night when a bunch of students ran wild. You know, it was the first warm week of spring. They'd had too much beer. But everybody in Kent had, was expecting the worst in a way, because there was this town-gown divide all across the country. But it was particularly sharp at Kent, I think, because Kent was the town and the university were about equal size. And there was a lot of Students for Democratic Society action the year before. They'd been outlawed by then, or they'd been banned from the campus. But things were ready to explode at Kent in a way they weren't ready to explode at other campuses. And then you had the fact that the governor, Jim Rhodes, could not succeed himself. He was running in a senatorial campaign against Robert Taft Jr., the sort of heir to a famous political family in Ohio. Rhodes was a law and order guy. He saw a chance to bring the National Guard into Kent and into Kent State and to Kent University and the town of Kent and burnish his credentials as a law and order candidate. He was losing by 70,000 votes by most estimates before this began, and when the primary was held the day after the shootings, he lost by 5,000 votes. So there's this whole sort of set of circumstances that came to bear on Kent that just didn't apply other places in the country.
The decision for the National Guard to face off and to oppose those on the campus commons on May 4th, who made that decision?
The The Guard was enforcing what it called the Ohio Riot Act, what's known as the Ohio Riot Act, which gives it the right to disperse crowds. There was no communication protocol between the Guard and the university. The Guard simply took over the university. They, the administration had no say in what happened on campus. But the administration nonetheless abandoned its own responsibilities. So the Guard was really calling the shots completely. They had Governor Rhodes, authority behind them. And so basically, when you get to noon on Monday, May 4, 1970, you have 1,000-plus students at one end of this grassy thing called space called the Commons. You have the Guard at the other end in front of the burned-out ruins of the Army ROTC building, which was set on fire Saturday night. And there was nothing in between them. There was no effort by the administration to get in the middle of them. And so it was just a volatile situation, and it took the worst possible turn it could.
That worst possible turn was a 13-second, 67-shot barrage that left 4 students dead, 9 wounded, and 1 paralyzed for life. What were those students doing at the time?
The Guard had chased the students up over a hill. The students had split around a building called Taylor Hall and come together on the other side of the hill in the parking lot, so the Guard went down to disperse that crowd. I feel terrible for the guardsmen. This book made me feel terrible for the guys who were out there marching up and down. They were terribly led. There was no strategy. They were marched into a cul-de-sac on the downside of the other hill. They were going back up the hill. The students saw the guards retreating. They were taunting them. Some of them were throwing rocks at the guards, but the closest student shot were 30 yards away. One of the ones shot was giving the, flipping the bird to a guardsman. Well, that's not a polite thing to do, but it's not a capital offense. He had a bullet blown, he had a hole blown out of his leg. But the other problem was the guard was forced into doing crowd control with battle rifles and bayonets. They had all the wrong equipment. They were poorly led. They had an indefinite assignment, which was just to break up crowds wherever they were gathered. And as one guardsman said, it's almost as if we were put on that hill to fail. And I think that's absolutely right.
So through all of this reporting, the guardsmen were never in danger. They were never threatened by those students.
They were. Some of them were pelted by rocks, after in the days afterwards, they tried to make it sound like the sky had been blackened out by rocks. That wasn't the case, but they were tired. They had just come from combating a Teamster strike creating order around a Teamster strike in Akron, 15 miles away. On the night before, few of them had more than 3 hours sleep. They were stressed. They were overworked. They had gas masks on because they were ineffectively firing tear gas at the students. There was a 17-mile-an-hour wind that was just dispersing the gas. And I think within the gas mask of a lot of these guards, they consistently say the students were 30 feet away. Well, they were 30 yards away. 30 feet, you can loft a rock at somebody. 30 yards away, Peyton Manning would have trouble hitting you with a rock, I think. Mm. So I think there was a riot going on inside their own gas masks, but they never should have been put in the position they were put in, and they never should have been doing crowd control with a rifle that is lethal to at least half a mile.
Howard Means is our guest on the roundtable. Today marks the 46th anniversary of the tragedy at Kent State University, May 4th, 1970, where Ohio National Guard fired on unarmed fleeing protesters, an action that left 4 students dead, 9 wounded, and 1 of them paralyzed for life. Again, the title of the book is 67 Shots. The campus was shut down immediately following the shootings. It did not reopen until several weeks later, until mid-June. And the university president held a news conference the next day. The quote that came out of that news conference from Robert White, the president, said, "I hear lunacy on one side and frightening repression on the other." Put that into a context for us.
I thought that was White's finest moment in this whole thing. The trouble was, you know, he's talking about lunacy on both sides, actually. But what you, Kent State happened in the middle of a rhetorical war between the left and the right, between pro-war and anti-war forces. For an example, 2 weeks before the shootings, Jerry Rubin, then head of one of the founders of the YIPI movement, Youth International Party, was on the Kent campus. And one of the things he said, and it was well reported in the local press, was, you know, in order to make the revolution work, quote, you have to first kill your parents. Well, he's talking metaphorically, but the people in Kent, the residents of Kent, the citizens didn't know that. They weren't, you know, they didn't have any sense of irony about all this. So when these sort of protests happen, this, you know, the first thing the Kent State, the Kent residents think is, oh my God, the students are coming to get us now. They've shot the guardsmen. They're coming over the hill to get us. So it's just everything was exaggerated. The rhetoric was exaggerated. The reaction was exaggerated, and there was no effort to find a common ground because there was no protocol for communication between the guard and the actually between the guard, the city of Kent, and the university, the administration of the university. Nobody, you know, I say in the book that nobody had a plan B. Everybody knew what they were going to do, but then all the plan A's broke down and there was no plan B left. And it almost got far worse after the shootings.
You make the point in the book that, that every party to the tragedy made the wrong choices at the wrong time and the wrong place.
Yes.
And you also, I mean, that's to say that it was both unavoidable and preventable. When did that become obvious?
To me?
Yes.
Boy, that's an interesting question. It became obvious to me, I would say, about halfway through my research. You know, you could see just these two threads. You could, you know, at one level, it's kind of like the Titanic and the iceberg coming together. Just sort of, in forces are propelling, they're really propelling the 1960s and all the ugliness of the 60s and the age of hate of the 60s to this pinpoint collision in Kent, Ohio. And so at that level, it does look a certain amount. It was going to happen somewhere, and it happened to Kent. Jim Rhodes famously said, we're not going to treat the symptoms. We're going to eradicate the problem. And in a way, they did eradicate the problem. But as you examine then the actions of all the parties involved, it's very easy to see where they could have turned here, turned there, where they could have softened a stance. If the guard had simply stood there at the other end of the commons, the students, I'm convinced, would have gotten bored and walked away eventually. The guard leaders couldn't stop themselves from going forward and having yet another confrontation with him, and they had become increasingly violent over the 3 days the guard was there.
So that 3 days, immediately following the shooting, bring us into those hours later where the word of this starts to spread and things really just go haywire.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, if you look, first of all, what had happened over the course of the 3 days was the protest had morphed from a protest about the Vietnam War to a protest about the occupation of the campus by the guard. So the guard was the issue by the time they got to Monday. And, you know, everybody knew that there was going to be this confrontation at noon on Monday. It had been well advertised. Teachers had talked about it in class. One professor's class had been taped, and that was played on the campus radio station. Everybody knew this confrontation was going to take place, and the president of the university and all his top staff were having lunch a half a mile away when this confrontation took place. They should have been down in the commons. They should have been between those people. Afterwards, you have the shootings, and the guard regroup down at their original staging ground by the burned-out ROTC building. There are probably 1,000 students back facing them yet again on the other side of the commons. And now there's blood in the air. And the students who were sort of modestly interested are now enraged by what they've seen and what they've heard. And you have this moment in time where a lot of students were, you know, some students, 20 students had painted X's on their chests and their foreheads, and they were getting ready to storm, if not rush towards the guard position, they were not going to disperse as ordered. And had they done that, the carnage is just, you know, horrible to think about. There were still 800 rounds in the M1s left, and there was a machine gun mounted on top of a Jeep, et cetera. And about three faculty members really made the difference, and one of them, particularly a guy named Glenn Frank, geology professor, ex-Marine, is the absolute hero of that day at Kent State.
Howard Means is our guest on the roundtable this morning. We're talking about the book 67 Shots, Kent State, and the End of American Innocence. The four students that were killed, you tell their stories in this book. And I'd like to begin with William Schroeder, but because he's an example of someone, again, just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He kind of just dropped in and said, "What's this all about?"
Exactly. All four are tragic. William Schroeder is more tragic, and probably Sandy Schur is the most tragic, because she was just walking between classes. But Schroeder was an Army ROT. He was number two in his class, as I remember, in the Army ROT freshman class, Army ROTC. He was a freshman basketball player. He was just a, you know, stand-up guy. By every evidence, he simply dropped in to have a look. He wasn't threatening anybody. He was, you know, 100 yards from the skirmish line where the guards were firing from. He was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And again, they were using battle rifles that were with an M1. If you about a quarter mile away, if you aim between the eyes, you're going to hit somebody in the throat. And he was in fact hit in the throat. But I think it was an absolutely random shot. There were random shots all over the place. There were windows blown out of cars in the parking lot. Of the four who were killed, only two could be said to have been at all leaders or significant participants in the protest. That would be Allison Krauss and Jeff Miller. And I say Sandy Schur was just passing between classes. It's so sad.
It is Jeff Miller's blood that you often see in the photos.
Exactly, yes. Mm-hmm, yeah. He bled out in a hurry. He was shot in the mouth.
So you started, when we started our discussion by talking about, you know, you wanted to look at this to see of what your memories were and how they kind of correspond to what's happening today. So what's the takeaway, do you think, all these years later, as we look at this, what can we learn from Kent State? Because it's my understanding from talking to many people over the years about this incident and others that it is, it's not impossible to think of it happening again.
No, it's a really good question. To me, the takeaway is that what ultimately went wrong at Kent State was something that goes wrong too often in our society today, and that we imposed a military solution on a civilian problem. That this was literally a military solution because you had the National Guard involved. But when you look at Ferguson, you look at Baltimore, you look at places like that, you have police forces doing their job, understandably, but they are equipped through the Pentagon surplus Pentagon equipment program with weaponry and machinery that was built for clearing door to door. I mean, clearing neighborhoods door to door in Kabul and Sadr City. And there's this massive, the massive employment of military-like force, if not actual military force, becomes in a way it becomes the problem itself, as it did at Kent State. If at Kent State the Ohio Highway Patrol had handled this, and that's who the university had all its communication protocols with, it never would have had this happen. But you had a military mindset dealing with a civilian problem, and the results were tragic for many people.
I am curious, just as we wrap up, there was some new, my understanding is that there was a new collection of documents and materials that were made available that helped you. Just give us a sense of...
Well, yes, the archives at the Kent State University people have done after many decades of sort of resisting, they've done a wonderful job of embracing this and becoming the custodians of the memory of what happened. And the archives people set out to create an oral history archive of the event. They have now done in excess of 130 oral histories, and they're just an invaluable archive, an invaluable resource. What I wanted to do with this book was to create a holistic view of what happened, students' eyes, guards' eyes, faculty members' eyes, townspeople's eyes, and the archive is just a huge help in that regard. It's exemplary, really. And also, the May 4 Visitor Center that is now in the middle of the campus is exemplary, too. It's a terrific little museum with a wonderful guided walking tour and an elegant narration by Julian Bond that goes along with it. It's very touching. I highly recommend it.
The name of the book is 67 Shots, Kent State, and the End of American Innocence. The book is published by DeCapo. Howard Means, thank you very much for sharing with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it very much, Joe.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, 67 Shots, by Howard Means. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.